third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday afternoon. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Predators head coach John Hines for closing out the second hour of the program with us from up in Edmonton. As right now, the first of six exhibition games today, currently on NHL Network, and it's the Lightning and the Panthers. The Predators will kick off the action tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. By the way, happy National Chicken Wing Day. Hope you guys can take in some wings today. You know, we should
I'm gonna get some support wings
today. Me too. Me too. A little bit later, for
sure. I ate a lot of chicken wings while I was at the beach. I've been on a wing kick lately.
So. Magic City or at the beach?
I did not go to Magic City. No, I did not go to Magic City. So.
Okay. I hear they have good wings.
That's what I'm told.
Let's bring in Alex Apple from Fox 17. Strange segue, but let's do that. He attended yesterday's press conference with Governor Bill Lee and others. I was watching, and Alex was involved in some of the questions there. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Jeez, though, you put me after John Hines. I mean, I imagine a chorus of thousands of Nashvillians listening to this being disappointed right now.
No, not at all. That was big news yesterday. That was an important press conference. Like I said, I made a point to stop what I was doing and make sure that I was watching and paying close attention because I didn't know where it was going. What was your take from yesterday's presser?
Well, I'll first mention the athletics angle. The governor's going to sign an executive order that will allow for contact sports to begin again in Tennessee. Preliminarily, that's football, that's soccer. It would open the way to other sports as we get further into the year. And as he put it, athletics are a big, important part of a lot of communities. No doubt that they are. Friday nights in the fall are something that so many people look forward to. So allow football to begin in Tennessee relatively on time. The big question is, and he was honest about it, he put it this way, we're going to start. The question is, can you get to the finish line? So we're going to try to have sports. We're going to try to have some sense of normalcy in that. There's not a ton of directives other than follow the TSSAA guidelines, which is the governing body. And for sure, there has been a lot of research go into that. And I think the one question that lingers is you've left it up to the schools as a parent, as a student, as an athlete. You're putting a lot of trust in your coaches, whoever is at the helm in your corner of the world, to follow that and take it seriously. And I think how well coaches are able to do that, because it goes through them first, will determine how successful this could be, because it's going to be an ugly story. You know, if some coach somewhere is, you know, kind of shrugging his shoulders at this, then half the team ends up with some sickness. And granted, for someone that's 18 years old, they should be okay from that. But it's certainly something that you've got to look at.
So let's just start with, as you said, contact sports can return this fall. Did you think this was coming? Did you think this was going to be the message? Were you 50-50? What were your thoughts going into it?
Well, if you look at Bill Lee's track record on this whole thing, he's erred on the side of, I guess you would put it as the more fun option. That's a really cavalier way to put it, but he's reopened. He stood by the reopening. He has not mandated masks. He's sort of taken the more libertarian view of all of this. And so I thought that there would be an attempt to get this going, an attempt to have some kind of football. There's going to probably be weird intricacies to it. There's going to probably be masks for anyone that gets to come to a game. Who knows how many fans of school will feel like they can allow. And what happens when a player gets sick and he's quarantined for 10 days? It's not like the NFL. You don't go sign some other player. Are places going to have to cancel games? Sure, that's in the realm of possibilities. I thought that they would get something worked out. The TSSAA, guys like Brad Lampley worked hard on this. The question is just how long it will last. Anyone who tells you they know is honestly lying.
Yeah.
It's going to be a weird season. I am as hopeful. I love covering some high school football on Fridays in the fall. I'm as hopeful as anyone that this is successful, but it will be a lot of difficult decisions left up at the very local level, each school, each district, and we're going to all have our collective fingers crossed. And that is honestly the clearest picture or the clearest expectation you can lobby, because we don't know how this will happen, and we can just hope for the best.
I apologize up front for not knowing their names offhand. The two ladies that were involved in the press conference as well. That was pretty interesting, and I was hoping you could kind of tell our audience and talk to us about they were talking about when kids test positive, right? This is the one thing that we've been talking about on this show. Like, it's not if, it's when. You know, when these sports come back, it's when they test positive. What happens? You got to have a plan. It's not if, it's when. And they said when kids test positive, there is, was it a 10-day isolation, 14-day quarantine? There's like two different ways to go about it. Could you kind of explain that and what that meant?
Right. So yesterday, if you were a parent of any school-aged child, you had to have tuned in because the big picture was about the reopening of schools. And Governor Lee wants every school to reopen in person. He thinks that there's no alternative for that. And so they've put out sort of a decision-making chart to help schools. And, you know, it's an interesting timing, end of July, to just now be putting this out. If you're a teacher, I guarantee you, for 2 months, you've been sitting there coming up with plans. If you're a school district, you're probably not just now starting your plans. But here's how it's going to work if you follow the governor's recommendations. A district could make tweaks to this, so you'll want to follow up and know what's happening in your neck of the woods. But it would be a 10-day isolation period if you are the one that tested positive. And you don't have to get a second test anymore now to be cleared. You need to just let the disease take its course. Once you're asymptomatic, you don't need a second test because a lot of times you'll still test positive and then you've got a false negative. You're wasting time at home. You're not still symptomatic. You're also probably not still contagious. So a 10-day isolation period, you wait that out. But if you are in contact, and this contact is now like 6 feet, if you're around someone within 6 feet for 10 minutes, then you have to do a 14-day quarantine because the virus can linger in you before you show any symptoms for up to 14 days. So actually longer than if you get the virus, which is, seems a little bit counterintuitive, but that's what the medical science is telling them right now. So that goes for any athlete and goes for anyone in a school. And so what schools and districts, it's coming from the district level, are having to do is submit a plan. If, you know, my son is out of school for 10 days, here's how he is going to continue to learn. Here's how he's not going to get behind. And that's not going to be an easy thing to do.
Right.
To just remove yourself for 10 days from the classroom or 14 days and get right back in. And that tough decision is all on the district to submit a plan for what happens in that very case.
And they said, Alex, that you don't need to get tested at the end of either one of those periods, right, isolation or quarantine. That I think I heard them say it's important to know that they don't have to get basically tested at the end of that. Isn't that what they said?
And this is good advice for anyone that is, you know, a working-age adult as well. What the science is telling them now is that the virus lingers in your body for a while. Right? You're not still sick. You're not still contagious. But there's enough of it still left in your body to where a simple test is going to read that it's present. And you don't want to be stuck at home unnecessarily from work, taken away from your family, taken away from school, taken away from athletics. So you don't have to get the second test to clear you. A medical expert, a doctor's opinion is just fine. And quite frankly, a vast majority of people are going to be okay after those 10 days, unless you're still riddled with illness and showing severe symptoms. So you don't get that second test, whether you're working and whether you're at school. And the odds are, if you do, it's counterintuitive and it's hard to unring this bell, but really you're putting yourself at risk to have to quarantine longer. Now, if you're still sick, you're still sick. And that's pretty self-explanatory as to how you feel. But a second test to confirm you're well is no longer necessary. And that's just one of those things that we're learning as you go along. I mean, there's so many smart people working on this. We started in March with no knowledge. Each 24-hour period, we get a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more, a little bit more, and we're able to better, it's not me. The medical experts are able to better contain and share advice on exactly how to attack this. Right now, you don't have to get a second test. And that's a big habit that we've all gotten into, that you can unring that bell, so to speak.
We're talking to Alex Apple, who was covering the press conference yesterday from the governor. And the big news sports-wise is that the governor has now allowed the contact sports to start closer to on time. So, Alex, has there been a reaction yet from the TSSAA? I know they're probably very happy to hear this news, but I'm curious their plan now to try to get this out rolling and do it right. As you mentioned, there's so many things to think about. You know, there's a lot of responsibility. If we're going to give you the opportunity to play, it's got to be done right. And there's a lot of schools, a lot of coaches out there that all have to be on the ball.
No question about it. And so they've got a little training that coaches are having to go through online. The TSSAA wasn't surprised at this because they've worked keenly with the governor to come up with the regulations that the governor's executive order basically just says follow TSSAA rules. He had confidence in that because they've worked together on this. I'll give you a little hit the high notes here. You can't have 7-on-7 scrimmages or practicing with another team, especially in the preseason. A football player can't practice in full pads until 5 days. The 5 days of heat acclimations has been completed, and that's COVID-related or not. Girls soccer is also included in this, where they're allowing drills and simulations in which players aren't engaged with an opponent, which is really just a teammate or coach. So they're trying to tailor these practices and provide good examples of what that might look like. And so absent a local mandate, schools have to adopt these Tennessee guidelines, these TSSAA guidelines, which they worked with a lot from the governor's office. And the coaches are having to go through this free online course that discusses what they can do to limit the spread of the virus. It's practice hygiene and cleaning and distancing when possible. And, you know, if you're looking at it from a coach's perspective, my hunch is that they have to take this seriously for the very, you know, reason of a lot of them are super competitive. You're in the coaching profession, I'd sure hope so. And if half your team is sick, that's not going to render very good results on Friday or on game day. And so it's something that coaches are learning, but everyone's going to have to learn with pretty good haste here as football practice can start up here relatively shortly next month.
I hope that ends up being part of the message because, as you said, Alex, it's inevitable that the enthusiasm, your love of playing and competing is going to win over here, especially right. For those that are a little more casual about how they've approached the virus. And I think you have to challenge them from a competitive standpoint that the teams that are the most responsible and are worried about hygiene and distancing and doing all those things right and minimizing the chances that somebody gets sick, they're going to benefit on the field. I just hope that's part of the message from the top down because that might be the best way to get through to some of these guys.
Yeah, and even if you're a hard-nosed science denier yep. that thinks this is all a big joke for whatever reason, you just don't believe what is medical fact. And at the very least, if you're trying to win games on Friday, you're going to need your team to be healthy. So why not take the precautions, one? And two, you'll learn really quickly the potency of this disease if you don't. My mom works in a real yeah. small school here in Nashville, and they had an event back in March that someone had the coronavirus at. That spread so fast, 40, 45 people ended up getting the virus at this small little school, and it shows you the potency if you don't take this seriously. My hunch is that drive to win is no different than what you're going to see on the pro level. If for nothing else, do this because you're trying to win games and you're doing this for a reason. And most of it at time, it's not for, you know, kicks and grins. We're trying to win, and so you're going to need a healthy roster, and maybe that is the motivating factor. It honestly doesn't matter so long as you know, right. kids are able to stay healthy and parents feel confident that they can send their kid into a good scenario.
Well, along those lines, Alex, one more for me, because I do think that's an important question. I do think there will be those that are a little more cautious, and I'm wondering if there are some schools that will take it a little slower and maybe adjust their schedule, whether it be high school or any other sport, and say, okay, the camaraderie is important, right? Practicing and workouts, I think that is very, very important. The routine, the activity for the kids, there's huge value, and that's worth some risk. But if you're a little more cautious about getting into competitive play, do you think there will be some schools that try to adjust and don't get back into it as quickly?
I would guess so, and I would guess that that decision will largely be made by the districts. I mean, I know that there are going to be, I want to say the latest number is around a dozen school districts statewide that are already going to start delayed. And then one-fifth of Tennessee students are going to start school virtually in the fall. And that's just off of two districts. That's Davidson County and Shelby County, Nashville and Memphis. And so what does a metro school do? You know, what is Tony Brunetti over at Pearl Cone going to have at his disposal to make something work for Pearl Cone and those communities? And especially in some of these Nashville areas where kids come from some tough home environments. And the camaraderie, the guidance, the, you know, paternal factor of being on a team with, say, a good leader like Tony Brunetti at Pearl Cone is instrumental for these kids. And so the hope is to make those resources available. I think that, you know, football coaches, soccer coaches, any fall sports coach, volleyball, is largely going to be hemmed in by what the district is going to allow them to do. Others probably will go even farther and say, you know, we're not going to have this contact practice on, you know, twice a day or whatever the latest, you know, scheme is for summer practices and preseason practices. We're going to rein that back in. And even if it was allowed, it's just not the smart thing for us right now.
Alex Apple of Fox 17 talking some high school football with us on Darren Donick and Chase. So you may not know the answer to some of these questions, but, you know, I've been a part of your show on Friday nights. We know how intensive the coverage is on Fox 17. You're out at games a lot with Dave and Tatum back in the studio. So what does coverage look like? I mean, this is another thing that we're talking about in pro sports, as Willie just joined us because he's been getting ready for the game tomorrow, of how they're going to go about doing things. Grandmas and grandpas and other people aren't going to be able to attend and watch their grandson or granddaughter play soccer, football, respectively. So how do you think this changes what we do and how we can cover high school sports?
I think it's going to look very different, just like Willie's coverage of the NHL is going to look really different. And it might even make it more important. It might be a really fun element of covering high school football this year that not that many people are, one, able to attend the game, or two, feel comfortable attending the game, in which case passing along highlights, giving that glimpse would be really important. My hunch is that, and I've already read something about this, anybody that's going to be on the field, much less in the stadium, is going to have to wear a mask, will be there, social distancing, wearing a mask. I mean, as far as filming a football game, it's pretty non-invasive. A photographer goes out and films part of the game, and they're really just on the sideline, and they can stand way back. That should be pretty easy. I would think that it would be a great year for the Friday football frenzy on Friday nights. And, you know, it kind of is nice when, you know, people are going to rely on getting that glimpse through the broadcast. It's a nice responsibility or a duty to have to the community, and I hope that people are able to go. But I don't know that that's going to be the case. I've not seen a final word from the TSSAA. If there is one, I've missed it. And so whether people can go or not, you at least get a glimpse of some highlights, and that will be fun because truly, I mean, in a lot of these communities, even if you're here in Nashville and you live in a, you know, major metropolis, in your bubble, the high school football season is really fun. If you live in a small rural Tennessee, the high school football season is the talk of the town. And so you hope that the ability to share in that joy continues this year because, gosh, I mean, couldn't we all use it, right? I'm sitting here so happy sports are back. I wish my Cincinnati Reds were a little better than 1-4. Hopefully the Predators don't let us down. But it is just brings an unquenchable joy that I hope that these communities get. And if they have to get it through our show on Friday night, then it'll be a pleasure to provide that service.
Well, and you bring up, you know, some different points of the fans, and you think about some of these small communities. The gate for a high school football game or a soccer game is so important, you know, from the financial side of athletics in those schools, in those communities. And if they're not allowed to have fans, obviously that's going to be a big hit to those programs. We have seen over in how I got my start was doing webcasting, was the early days of webcasting and calling games for high school football. I could see that being another opportunity where, you know, you charge whatever the ticket price would be for the gate to get into a feed and watch a game and be able to make up some of that money.
It's a great idea, and I think a lot of schools are moving toward that anyway. I mean, most of them, I feel like you can stream now. Last year, I think every one that I tried to look at on a stream, I was able to find it in some capacity. I mean, isn't all of this technology such a huge blessing? You know, if nothing else, if you've watched any baseball, you can have Tom Brenneman sit in a studio in Cincinnati in a building that has nothing to do with baseball, and he can call the game for you in Chicago. Or, you know, you can send two guys up into the press box to call a game and digitally stream it for you in high school football, soccer, you name it, whatever. They're able to do that. That technology is so huge, and it would have been, it would have probably taken us back to the old ticker tape days, right? And that's how you called the game. It's not all that dissimilar, right? Guys are sitting in a building somewhere calling the game, trying to deliver the same fan experience as they were when the updates were coming through on ticker tape. You can find a way to do it, and I think most schools will. I think that there's such a desire for that. And like you said, too, if you could figure out a way to charge $5-6, whatever your gate is, and make a little money off of that, that would go a long way for a lot of these programs.
Absolutely. Alex Apple, Fox 17. Hey, man, we appreciate it as always. Good work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, Alex Apple does a great job for Fox 17. A lot of good stuff to unpack there. Willie has joined the show. We will react when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Good stuff from Alex Apple, Fox 17. By the way, rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. All Lightning right now in the first of six exhibition games today. Lightning up 4-0 on the Panthers, about 7 minutes to go in the second period. They're up 2-0 after one. They've tacked on two more, and it has been all Tampa to this point. Sergei Bobrovsky was in there in between the pipes for the Panthers. So not going Florida's way. The second game will be at about 1:30 our time, and it'll be Colorado and Minnesota. So that should be a good one. And that will be from Edmonton, where we talked to Predators head coach John Hines to end the second hour. Willie, you're back with us. We've had a loaded show. We've gotten to a lot of things. And it's been a good show to this point. Anything stand out in the John Hines interview?
Well, I'm going to try not to screw up the show if it's been so good. I did listen to Coach Hines with you guys on the way. I was actually over at Bridgestone Arena. We're putting together our studio. We're trying to turn basically a hockey/basketball locker room. When the NCAA tournament or the SEC tournament is going on at Bridgestone Arena, we're in one of the locker rooms that's been utilized. It's also an auxiliary locker room that a hockey team can use. So we're taking a locker room that's not usually used very often and trying to turn it into a TV studio. So we're trying to get a feel for the layout, where to put the monitors, where to put the statistician, how to keep social distance involved. We even took one of the boards, you know, the plexiglass things off of the, we just found one down there and we had one of the guys bring it in there. So an actual hockey game-worn plexiglass that people have been chipping pucks off of all these years, I guess, will be used to divide me and Mace in there. I actually tweeted out a picture. So that's what I was doing this morning. But I thought, to John Hines, it sounded to me, guys, like he had not told the goalies. He was very careful to say, you know, I want the goalies to be the first people that know exactly what we're doing tomorrow. But it seemed like he was implying that they would both play some tomorrow. And that's what most teams have done in these exhibition games. I got a chance to watch pieces of all three of them yesterday, and I don't think there was a team that played a goalie all the way through.
I said at the beginning of the show today, I was watching Calgary and Edmonton last night, and I made a mental note that both coaches almost right at the exact halfway point of that game pulled their goalies and put in the backup. So I didn't see the other two. I mean, I watched bits and pieces, but I didn't notice or look when how they played the goalies. But last night I just happened to be watching at the right time, midway through the second period, and both Edmonton and Calgary put in the backups right at the halfway point. So, yeah, I suspect that's probably how most of these coaches are going to play it, just right down the middle. Play them both, give them ample opportunity both to see live action before you head into whatever you're heading into this weekend. I thought that was a more than fair answer from John Hines. I got no issues with that. Pekka and UC deserve to hear that first from their head coach rather than via social
for sure.
media or, you know, however that would get out if he said it on our show. I can respect that. Because John Hines has been a pretty open book. I think that's one thing early on I really appreciated about him. He's pretty open and pretty candid, and he'll say if he can say it, he'll say it. And he's not. And in fact, he even said, I think he said, I'm not afraid to say that. He goes, I just don't think it's fair to them because I haven't told them yet. And so I can respect
right.
that.
At this point, guys. And this is just a feel for me. Would you guys be surprised if it weren't UC Soros playing the starting, getting the start tomorrow? And, Darren, we talked about this in these terms, too. I think you already have your plan on who's going in game one. I don't think tomorrow's game is going to be looked upon as a tryout, but I could be wrong about that.
Well, I did get a little clarification, I felt like, or a little bit, how about a little bit more insight to the question that I kept bringing up all last week is how much stock is being put into, you know.
I thought that was a good answer he gave.
And yep. Yes. And so I thought that was kind of giving us a little peek behind the curtain of what exactly their mindset was about the scrimmages and the training camp. And so That did help me with that, and with that being said, yes, at this point, I've changed my tune. I've admitted that. I said that on the show Monday. I said it on Preds Insiders on Monday with Ryan Porth that I thought coming into camp, Pacarine would probably get the nod because of the experience, 89 postseason starts, and I just thought he would get the nod for game one. Didn't mean that he would finish a series or that would mean he's the guy. I just said the nod for game one. But in the last 2 weeks, I've changed my tune without knowing how much stock will be put into it. Just from what I've seen, it has felt like UC Soros will get the game one nod. So I have changed my tune on that after going through shows at Bridgestone Arena the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
Chase, he used the term, today's news. We have to go off of today's news.
Yep.
And he said, I do use what happened leading up to the break as weighted stuff. In other words, he's not discounting it. It does mean something. But I have to go off of today's news. I thought that was noteworthy. And he used examples in all three cases. Guys who have picked right up where they left off, who were playing well before, and now they're still playing well. But guys going one way or the other. Guys who played well going to the break, but maybe haven't looked as sharp since coming back. And then guys who have had the light go on and the fresh start appears to have helped. So I do think that was something that really jumped out.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think he's going about it the right way of essentially taking what information he had, but also realizing that a lot has changed in the last 4.5 months. I find it interesting, Darren, that that you go that way, that you say UC Soros, because you and I kind of was leaning Pecorine because of everything you just said, the experience and, you know, the skins on the wall and however you want to put it. But something that has been on my mind since I heard him say it was when Adam Vingan kind of gave the opinion of it might be easier to go, if you start with UC Soros, to go to Pecorine than it would be the other way around. Because of, you know you have that ace in the hole with Pecorine of the experience that he has, and Soros has, you know, he's earned the opportunity. So with all that said, I tend to be on the same page with you of going that I believe Soros could get the start. Now, as for tomorrow, I wouldn't be shocked if you know, they go Rene and then Soros, and, you know, if there's some strategy involved, if, you know, trying to not tip the hand, so to speak, but Sunday is the one that we're all focused on, and I think 74 will be in between the pipes to get it going for the Preds.
Help me with this. Is that really tipping a hand? I mean, if they know who the starting goal is, is that really – I mean, baseball, you know who the starters are. The managers don't come out and say, look, we'll tell you game time who's going to be starting this game. Just, we don't want to tip our hand on who's the starter. I mean, what do you really – I mean
– it's a fair question. I mean, you know you have to be ready for both.
Tip in your – I don't even understand that, you know, gamesmanship. What do you really show – what are you doing by letting everybody knowing you're starting goaltender? I mean, what does that change? I don't get that. I mean, unless you guys can tell me something I don't understand, what tipping your hand? I mean, to who's the starting goalie? Like, that changes how the other team's going to approach a game?
Well, I'll answer it like this, and because I made a comment to somebody during that interview. I really appreciate how John Hines goes about answering questions.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in – as a slight towards Peter Laviolette, but Peter Laviolette would not have answered the goalie question the way that John Hines did. He just wouldn't have. He would have sidestepped it. He didn't like to tip his hand, as I said. And so maybe there's a little bit of that of, okay, well, this is how it's been the last 5 years, and it's still just a transition for me of, hey, you know what? The guy he marches out there tomorrow could be the guy that marches out there on Sunday. I mean, he may be saying, no, that's our guy. If UC Saros starts, he's starting Sunday. So there very well could be some truth to that. So you bring up a good point. We've laughed about it for years with college coaches that they're going to have four quarterbacks in camp and, not going to tell you who it's going to be, even though everybody knows because of the strategy. I mean, the good teams are going to be ready for either one. And I believe, and we've talked about this, under this format, you're probably going to need both of your goalies anyway. I mean, there's a back-to-back in this series. So
I think these teams will have ample time to go through the tendencies of both goalies. I'm talking about both teams scouting both goalies. So I tend to go with Darren that it's minimal at best, the secrecy. But I also think you have to time it right when you're going to tell the goalie you've got the nod in game one. My guess is that hasn't happened yet. Even though the coaches might have a pretty good idea of which way they're going to go. But we'll see.
I don't think there's a wrong answer.
One thing, Darren, you and I were floating out there too, is will you split it half and half tomorrow, or will you go two periods for the guy that's likely to start game one and one period for the other guy? I have seen some teams go that route. Like I saw Carter Hart, for example. He played, I think, the first two periods, and then they used Brian Elliott in the third period in the game against the Penguins. That could be a clue on what they're thinking there. I think it's just more of a, when do you want to let the public know? Because everybody's dying to know. That's one of the that's number one thing that everybody's wondering.
Do we think who starts in net tomorrow afternoon is who is going to be the starter on Sunday?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be my guess. They could play games. They could be playing a mind game and maybe do a little swap, but my guess is tomorrow's starter will be an indicator starting Sunday.
I mean, same deal. I mean, no proof. It's just my gut feeling is whoever starts tomorrow is going to be the starter on Sunday.
Yeah, and you may be right on that. And again, I admit that there's some of my way of thinking is the old way, and it's just kind of transitioning from that. John Hines may come out later and say, "Hey, UC Saros is starting for us. That means he's going to be the guy on Sunday." I mean, he is forthcoming with a lot of information. I mean, I can remember some of the first morning skate scrums with him. He'd get asked the question of, okay, do you know who it's going to be in net tonight? And he'd go, yeah, Pecorine is going to start for us tonight. Or, yeah, UC Saros is going to start for us tonight. I mean, he wasn't as secretive about it. So we may know. I mean, we might know by the end of the day, and we may know, of course, we'll know at some point tomorrow.
I wouldn't be surprised if on Friday, after they've played this game, they might go ahead and announce it publicly. I don't know that to be a fact, but as you said, John Hines as a coach, I do think is more forthcoming of just saying, let's just go ahead and get it out there. Who's kidding who? You know, people are going to talk. People are going to find out. They have their ways of finding out who the starting goalie is. So why not just go ahead and say it? So we'll have to wait and see how they approach it. You know, there's a lot that I think we are going to have insight into, because you can only dress the 20 guys tomorrow, too. So I would have to think, by the same token, the people that start that game tomorrow, the fourth line in particular, the third D pair, some of the things we have some maybe some questions on, that's probably an indicator on who's going to go with game one, go in game one, if there are no injuries or issues with any of those guys, right? That is something he said in the interview with you guys. He said, we can't just tiptoe or wade into this. We want this energy intensity to be where it needs to be. For example, Darren, I guess you watched a little bit of the Edmonton-Calgary game last night. Mm-hmm. It got heated. There's no question. That rivalry,
they
went at it. I mean, the Matthew Tkachuk, Zach Cassian, they got into that. And I would guess that the coaches like that. You know, hey, good. Well, why not? You already have the bad blood naturally between these two teams. There's already bad blood between these particular guys. So we're going to have to get up to that intensity anyway, so let's do it.
Willie, I actually was talking about that whenever John Hines called in. In fact, he was on hold and probably heard that conversation. I was literally referencing, well, if we were wondering if, you know, how these guys were going to be, considering, you know, would they be a little, you know, apprehensive, would it be a little bit different because of, you know, what we're in? I was like, watching that Edmonton-Calgary game, or is it just instincts, the puck drop? You know, you just do what you do. From watching that game, you just do what you do, because they were not afraid to hit, face wash, you know, scrums, all everything that you would expect to see in an Edmonton-Calgary or a rivalry game, you saw last night, and that was an exhibition. So if they're doing that in an exhibition game, I think we kind of know what the answer is going to be and what the look is going to be like on Saturday and Sunday. It's going to look like we expect a hockey game to look, especially a playoff hockey game, right?
Yeah, and you want
no
that.
Question. And so, guys, with that said, I enjoyed watching the games. I didn't watch start to finish all three games, but I watched parts of all three of the games.
So did I. Mm-hmm.
I thought the intensity was good. I thought the quality of play was good. And I also thought the look and the broadcast and the sound, I think it would get better as they play more games and the people there that are actually pushing the buttons and piping in the sound at the right times. I thought it was good. You know, it reminded me of some games where, you know, maybe international play where there's not a real big crowd there, or maybe even a Winter Classic where there's a huge crowd, but they're set back in a football stadium. They're not close to the rink. I thought visually it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I had no issues with I did the same thing. I watched a little bit of all of them, but probably spent more time on the Edmonton-Calgary because, as I said earlier in the show when you weren't here, it was so nice to come home. We had to go do some things last night because we actually had a night off, no baseball, no hockey, which is great to say. You know, some evenings or afternoons can be hockey again. That's fantastic to come home and turn on the television and have options. Like, oh, do I want to watch the Dodgers and the Astros?
Yes.
I took in a lot of.
I did the same thing.
Do I want to watch Edmonton and Calgary? I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, this is so welcoming. And that's literally how I fell asleep, was flipping back, watching baseball and hockey. And I was like, this is so good. We've been waiting
It was so good. We were like, do I want to watch the Reds and the Cubs?
Right.
How are the, you know, the Padres, Mets are beating the Red Sox, the so maybe I'll sneak over and watch. Yeah, Kirk Casale, we flipped over here, and he hit a home run. My son and I were just, we were like in our own little sports bar. We were so excited.
Yep.
We even got a second screen going. We were like,
okay.
Let's flip up, you know, let's pull up a game over here. We had all kinds of stuff going on.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to have to reposition some things in the office because my TVs are kind of behind me, just the way the shelf is, and I need to move them in front of me just so I can.
Yeah, that's TV's behind you is no good.
No, it doesn't work. It's kind of nice when I'm doing the show because there's the distractions behind me, but still, you know, it's going to be important here for the next several weeks or months.
Lightning up 4-0 on the Panthers through 40 minutes of play. We'll come back and put a bow on the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll talk pucks with Chris Mason coming up at 1 o'clock, our weekly chat with him. And we always look forward to that every Wednesday. And that is brought to you by Smoky Mountaintops. So keep that in mind. That's coming up at the top of the hour. The 49ers have been busy giving out, like a lot of teams, giving out new contracts. Remember, they just gave Kyle Shanahan, their head coach, a long-term deal. What was that, last week or in the last couple of weeks? Today, the 49ers have also given their general manager, John Lynch, a new five-year contract. So that goes through the 2024 season. That's being reported. And they're not done there. By the way, this is, don't forget, a team that went to the Super Bowl. So it, people tend to get rewarded when you get to that final leg or stage of your postseason play. There is a lot of talk of them trying to get a long, long, big deal done with their tight end, George Kittle. But I say to George Kittle and the Kittle family, don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Do not sign a long-term deal with San Francisco. Don't do it. Come home. You know where home is. Just come home. So, George Kittle, don't do it. Don't sign with the 49ers.
I agree.
Let the Titans, you know, woo you with a big contract. Don't do it, man. Come home. It's still weird to say, come home. The Kittle, you know, the Kittle family, right here. Mom, Philip, dad, they're here. George lives here in the off season. Just stay home, man.
Buddies with Philip Forsberg?
Yeah.
He's probably saying, come on. You know, we tried to get that out of him when we had Philip on. He wouldn't really bite on it, but yeah.
But I will say this, from what I've read and heard, whether it's, you know, watching on NFL Network or what have you, it doesn't sound like they're close. I think there's talks, but from everything I've read and heard, it doesn't sound like they are near. You know, there's nothing out there of, hey, George Kittle and the 49ers are nearing, you know, a new contract extension. Like, there's none of that. It's just, hey, there's talks, there's obviously interest. But I haven't seen anything where it says they are close or they're finalizing. So I put it out there. George Kittle, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't sign a long-term deal with the 49ers.
Could you imagine if that if it ended up happening? And so let's see. He'll have a year left after this year, so he's got 2 years left. Is that right?
Is that right?
Or is this the final year?
I thought it was the final year, but that doesn't – I can't imagine that they would go into the final year and not have – I mean, he's the best tight end in football. So I can't imagine that they would be willing to go through the season and then – I don't know. Let's look that up. Let's find out exactly how much longer he's got.
By the way, Darren, did you pass along to Chase the information we were able to get from the Spot Rack guys on the correct that we were correct in our pronunciation?
No, I did not pass.
This was big news. This was big news that we did verify, Chase, that it is Spot Rack, not Spotrack, as some like to call it. But he says it is one of the most asked questions he gets.
He said for the last 12 years.
Yes.
This is, according to SpotRack, this is the final year for George Kittle and his contract.
Whoa.
Do you know what he's making this year?
It's probably embarrassing. Embarrassingly low.
It is.
Yeah, it's got to be. Two and a half mil.
You're close. 2.1.
Ooh. Wow.
Yep.
You know. A lot of guys would put, and I would not expect this from him, but a lot of guys would be like, I'm not playing for that contract. You give me a new contract or else I'm sitting out. I know he's not going to do that, but a lot of guys would. He is grossly underpaid.
Oh, and they know that. They've been lucky.
Oh, yeah. Well, but that's how it works, right? You just have to find, you have to give yourself some time to, and don't let it go to the last minute to offer the right money. So this is, the strategy is there. And, of course, we have all of this uncertainty about revenues over the next couple of years because of all this. And, you know, how well can you get through this season? So that applies to George Kittle just like it applied to Derrick Henry.
They don't think that much of you, George, if they're giving their GM and their coach new fat new contracts and they haven't given you one yet and you're the best at your position. So
well, they also have – they also probably – I don't know this, but you could probably look on SpotTrack. Have they designated somebody as a franchise player? I'm sure they would have that up their sleeve. He is a guy worthy of the franchise tag.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, they – so are you saying for next season, for next offseason?
Right. He's
no, saying,
if
they can't get anything done, if
they
can go up to the last minute, yeah. You just put the tag on them. So,
right.
Yeah. So
slap
the whole,
him with the tag.
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen. I mean, it would be fun. It'd be awesome if he came here, all the connections. But the 49ers do have some control right now that would prevent that from happening. So I don't have – let's see. According to SpotRack, let's look at their – can look at the 49ers contracts and see, see what it could look like if there is another candidate for that. I mean, Jimmy G is locked up. They just got Trent Williams, so I mean that's a possibility. But I think he's going to be. I mean, he's one of the best players on the team, if not the best player on the team, most reliable player on the team. So there'd be no doubt in my mind that's what they would do. That they would have to tag him if they can't get a deal done.
By the way, I just saw was it yesterday that Bryson Hopkins signed with the Rams?
Yeah, congratulations!
So congratulations to him. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He's officially a pro.
He is. The ink has dried, and he is officially a professional athlete, getting paid for his work. So congratulations to Bryson Hopkins. When we come back, we will get back on the hockey topic with Chris Mason. We'll talk all things hockey as it is back and on the ice. They are doing these exhibition games, full schedule, full slate today, three more tomorrow to round out things, and then they're going to get after it on Saturday. Five qualifying round games on Saturday. They all count. And Sunday, there'll be qualifying round games, of course, Predators and Coyotes, but there'll be also some round-robin games, but a full slate of real hockey this weekend. So we'll get into all that and more with Chris Mason to kick off the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.